Okay, we got the thumbs up.
Oh, we're going already. Okay,
yeah,
Donald...
okay, we gotta stop talking about 30 Rock so we can talk about 30 Rock. Okay, go on.
Donald Trump, our president, mine and yours.
Yep.
God love him. He gave a primetime address, which I think was viewable on some television channels. I don't watch it, so...
One, but not all of the networks picked up this pressing, breaking...
Tell me all about it. Oh, you didn't watch it either.
I saw some of the tweets about it.
You did better than I did then, because I couldn't look at Twitter, because Twitter is broken on my phone, and we're in a two... You know how I hate two-factor authentication. And then we'll talk about Trump, just so everyone knows. Mm-hmm. I can't, like, I log in.
Petty gripes first. And
I
then
give
we'll get
it
to
my
Trump's
phone number. And then it says, we've texted you a code. And I don't get the code. Mm-hmm. So I can't, I have it on my laptop. But I'm wondering if this is going to be healthy for me.
Yeah.
Twitter and I might have just come to an end on the phone.
Okay.
And we'll see,
no,
and we'll see how it is.
No, it's like Godfather 3. It keeps... pulling you back.
Yes.
Because I deleted Twitter on my phone.
Yeah.
And nevertheless, you know, notifications, people send you tweets, and then you're left trying to look at the websites without the app, which they've made it very difficult to do. And it gets to the point where, regrettably, Twitter is still just useful enough for our professional lives that you still kind of have to look at it.
Well, in the same hour that I lost access to Twitter, I agreed to do like a Substack live with somebody, and I had to put the Substack app on my phone, and I had to enable notifications. So then I was just getting all these. It's like from one John's bed to the next, right?
Yeah.
What can you do?
Yeah. Well, that's my problem with two-factor authentication, because like it's, you know, you try to log in, and it says we'll text your phone, and then Twitter texts me, and it's like, you up? And I'm like, okay, come on.
Yeah.
No more of this.
No more of this. Okay, now that we've ranted about things no one gives a shit about at all, I think...
Let's go to our president ranting about something no one gives a shit about.
Well, no one but him. I think it was about... It was election stuff, 2020.
It was, yeah. I read some of the...
Stolen election. Remember when you used to have to dance around that term, even to talk about it for something that was going to be posted to social media or to YouTube? You had to, like... I mean, you don't remember this, maybe. I do, because I was hosting a television show at the time on YouTube, and you had to be so careful when you just described the words Trump was using to talk about this, unless you jumped, you followed it with, and by the way, that claim is false, they were going to shut you down. It was truly a crazy time.
We
now we can agree with that it was stolen, and no one will do anything.
Right, except for maybe the bosses. But
yeah.
No, we do forget... Social media has
how you
gotten,
know it's not stolen.
Oh, yeah, good
got
point.
You there.
Well, they got they released these docs that apparently show everything.
Yeah.
Now we really do forget. Social media has gotten bad in certain ways, worse in certain ways, but we forget that there was a very censorious regime controlling what you could say online.
Yes.
In a weird gray space of public and private censorship that is hard to disentangle.
I mean, we got shut down for playing a clip. We being Rising, the show I host, we got shut down for just saying, like, and we're news commentators. And today, Donald Trump made the following claims. And we played a clip of Donald Trump saying those things. And then we just moved on to some other topic.
Yeah.
We didn't say, and Donald Trump is right about that. But because we didn't interrupt it to say, and by the way, he's wrong, they suspended us for a week. It was crazy.
Yeah. And
crazy.
And this was like the... like political topic of the day that they're trying to reduce discourse
and
about.
They made it hard to even talk about it.
Yeah.
They shut down the January 6th committee's YouTube page for a while too, for the same reason. I'm like, well, I don't think anyone is more committed to holding Donald Trump accountable for the things he said than the January 6th commission.
Right.
Anyway. All that aside.
Not to be confused with the January 6th choir, which is more favorable to many of his election claims.
Oh. What kind of songs do they sing at the choir?
Silent Mike Pence. Right. We three fake electors.
Yes. God rest you. Why is it a Christmas thing?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's choirs,
you made it a Christmas
I guess.
Thing.
Yeah. Maybe.
Did they make you sing in the like Christmas choir in school when you? Or you didn't go to Catholic school?
No, I didn't go to Catholic school.
I
went
Catholic to school.
Godless DOD schools. Mm. Yeah,
that's horrible.
That's
well,
yeah. So that's why I'm a godless atheist, and you are a pious Catholic to this day.
There we go. Okay, Trump said some things
about the 2020 election being stolen. Yeah, so we were, I remember they were attempting to create a lot of hype about this primetime address in the lead up to it.
Yeah.
And even some of our own internal discussions here, it's like, oh, you know, this is going to be all the news, you know, after the address.
Blowing the
and I brought
open.
Up this question, and I'll ask it to our remaining viewer. What was...
Todd?
Yeah. Todd, this one's for you. What was the last primetime address? What was the subject of the Trump's last primetime address before this one?
I don't remember.
How about the one before that?
I don't remember.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He repeatedly does this. As president, he's like, oh, I'm the president. The one thing people love is for me to hear me talk.
No, I remember.
And so I'm going to do an address, and it's going to be, we're going to have some topic. Oh, my God, is he going to announce war with Iran? Some new policy initiative, maybe? What is what presidents used
to do? I remember
do?
The one where he said we were going to reorganize the Republic into the First Galactic Empire. Oh, that was Palpatine.
Yeah.
Never mind, I can't remember any of them.
That would be memorable. That would be memorable. But no. No, Trump just likes to hear himself talk. He is an elderly man at this point, and like many elderly people, he just has the same stories and resentments that he likes to repeat ad nauseum.
Yeah. We want this show to do well, so we need to praise him now. And great. He's so good at that incoherent
You know,
rant.
I will.
Look, I'm not a hater. I don't know what I'm supposed to like at this point.
Exactly, yeah.
It's hard to find something
you're
to like.
You're a showman. Give us something new,
right?
Yeah. Well, okay, so both the best and the worst of Trump was on display at the 4th of July, his speech. Did you watch that on the 4th of July? Okay, so it was the worst of Trump in that everyone is sitting around waiting for the fireworks, which normally go off at sunset, right, on 4th of July.
They went off on July 5th.
They did, yes, right. They
I
went
know,
off
I eventually laid down and slept and waited for them, and then I...
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
They went off so late because Trump had planned he wanted to give a big speech before the fireworks. And then he goes up there after delaying this for hours. You know, all the kids who stayed up to watch the fireworks have to go to bed or whatever. And he's like, if I was just talking to one person at 4 a.m, we were going to do this. Like, he thinks he's doing a good thing by staying up late and delaying his speech until, you know, after the weather had cleared. But then he gets up there and he starts riffing. And the hilarity of, him doing, like, you know, in the shadow of the Lincoln Memorial, complaining about election interference is just so hilarious. The one legitimately positive thing I will say about him, and I do kind of get why he waited, is he did have a bunch of the Medal of Honor winners up there and to, like, you know, give them, you know,
good.
Some recognition. So that was nice.
I did appreciate
that. But, yeah, it was.
We respect the troops.
We respect
the troops.
Thank the troops. This is a patriotic podcast.
Yes. That's right. Patriots in command. Patriots in control.
Patriots in control. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to someone of slightly greater substance who I nevertheless think I like even less right now, which is the vice president who's on with Joe Rogan.
J.D. Vance.
And this annoys me when this happens. He was talking about, so Joe Rogan went to some of his Joe Rogan issues, you know, Epstein, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then J.D. Vance is like, you're right. He was probably Mossad agent. He was probably CIA agent. Joe Rogan's like, probably both. Yeah, J.D. Vance, probably both. Yeah, yeah. And then Joe Rogan asks the logical follow-up question, it's one thing to be making this claim when you're outside the government trying to get in, but now you have access to any information that would possibly substantiate that. Have you seen any of that information? And Vance says, no, I have not. I think you should be disallowed from making those claims at this point if you're in a position to prove them and don't.
Right.
And I'm getting real sick of it. It's like, it's your CIA, dude.
Yeah.
Well, this would be a huge, you can't pretend you don't, you have no way to, I think this, but how do I know? If you don't know in the position you're in, then I think it's probably just made up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's starting to bother me. You know, I'm an Epstein anti-delusion person on this stuff at this point, but
yeah, we've talked and, you know, to a modest degree, even disagreed about some of these things.
Yeah.
This is the
you could just disagree with me on my podcast. But that was an interesting choice you made.
our podcast.
Yes. we'll see how much that goes on.
This is the struggle of running on we're going to open the books
platform. Open them books.
And then you get into office and you don't, either because you didn't actually care about that. Maybe the books don't show what you would like them to show, or for whatever reason. But you got to be a little smarter then. You got to either back off saying that stuff, yeah, or you got to go all the way and be like, the deep state is thwarting us in office. Like, Trump can, to his credit, can actually be at least consistent on this, right, where he's frequently saying his own intelligence agencies are undermining him, right?
Right. But Trump was correct on Epstein from the start. Mm. I give him major props. He said, everyone else went whole hog on this, and he said, yeah, it doesn't seem that important to me. I think if we release this information, there's going to be a lot of wrong stuff in there. It's going to embarrass a lot of people who didn't do anything wrong. We could do it, I guess. We'll look at it, but it's not a major priority for me.
And he was correct.
And that was dead on.
Yeah.
Dead fucking right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the examples of Trump actually being like less crazy than yes, the people around him.
Correct.
Yeah, totally.
That's correct, Tucker.
Yeah. you know, the one who I think, you know, realized this and made the right decision was Dan Bongino, right?
Mm.
Who is appointed to a prominent position within the FBI on the basis
realized
of being
it was too difficult to make his...
To actually have an actual job, and that he wants to go back to being the podcast host, being yeah, like, oh, they're covering it all yeah, up.
They are out to get me.
Right.
But you can't be one of they.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was no good as a they, them.
No.
Now he's a he, him again.
No, the only ones left are either just complete idiots and goofballs, like right, Kash Patel, who just wants the FBI plane so he can fly to his girlfriend's the
hockey game or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Or he plays hockey.
Oh,
she,
okay. Yeah.
She has a podcast. No, that's Stephen Miller's wife. She's a actress. I don't remember what she does.
Yeah, she's got the
yeah,
gentleman scholar, rich woman right, businesses, right?
He likes hockey.
Yeah, if he was a less prominent liberal, she would have like a candle store that loses money. But instead, she has a podcast.
I love a good candle.
Yeah,
I buy candles.
Well, the air is candles here in DC today.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling too well this week. I was a little ill or possibly jet lagged or hungover still from my Vegas trip.
The trifecta.
Yeah, it was what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And along with all the cocaine I couldn't get through.
Oh, yeah.
Left that behind too. Nah, just kidding. Just kidding, people. This is a family friendly podcast. So then on my way here, I'm scooting here and everyone, actually a little COVID flashback, because everybody's wearing masks.
Right, yeah.
But mm-hmm, I guess that's kind of for good reason, because it's opaque.
Yeah, it is very smoky.
The smoke is very yeah, thick. Why is that? Again, I haven't been able to check Twitter for the last 48 hours, so I don't know why things are happening. It was a really good idea to do this podcast today.
Totally.
I'm yeah, more uninformed than I've ever been.
I think there's some fires somewhere.
In Canada?
Maybe. Yeah, somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah. The wind, it carries.
Yeah. It's yeah, not our fault, though.
No.
It's like somebody else's fire.
Canada's fire. Yeah, they really need to put a lid on that. Yeah. Come on, guys. Yeah.
What are you doing?
We've been so nice
what
to
are you
them,
doing?
Yeah.
I mean, is it climate changey? No.
Well, everyone says every weather thing is climate right, change related.
Right.
Yeah.
There's too much rain, not enough rain, too much wind.
Yeah.
It's hot, it's cold.
Yeah.
My freezer had a problem this morning. Climate change, naturally.
Climate change, yeah.
Not that I
well, it's not changing
it
the climate in your freezer.
Right.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. That's a climate change issue.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. You have some real COVID aesthetics, I guess, maybe more justified in this case.
Sure.
Although
it's hard to breathe outside.
Yeah. But like, how does this compare to smoking a cigarette? Right. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Now you got me going.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't that be nice? it's so hot. And then the smoke from the fires, and there's construction everywhere, including right outside our office.
Yeah.
So there's just, it's an uncomfortable vibe outside. Right
this
now,
is our one sanctuary.
Yeah.
This podcast studio.
Yeah.
And its own separate HVAC system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What else we got here? Oh, you know what I want to talk about?
What's that?
Ruben Gallego.
Okay.
He was involved in a scandal yesterday that I did see about.
Oh, yeah. Some pretty nasty
pretty
allegations that
dark
he...
stuff.
He allegedly slept with women.
What?
Oh my God. I'm
all right,
sickened
this is,
just saying it.
Yeah, I hope there are no children and or elderly listening to this, because your fragile hearts might give out. He was accused.
Well, that's like a weather advisory. Young children and the elderly should not listen to this podcast.
Should not listen to this podcast. He's a Democratic senator from Arizona. And he was a friend of, Eric Swalwell. Mm-hmm. So there was always like a whispers that some...
Partners in crime.
Yeah, partners in crime. And he was married and got divorced and got remarried. So it hit. Yes, as you said, he had consensual sexual relationships with two different female staffers that do not work for him.
Yeah.
And he was not married at the time.
No.
Stop. So it's pretty bad.
Has he been charged yet?
Yeah, that's what we want to know.
Yeah.
No, he's not been charged. He's not resigned.
You're innocent until proven guilty in this country unless you have consensual sex as a single man with
right.
people who work in the same institution
right.
as you, even though they're not your direct reports.
Right.
That is probably the worst thing.
And when I say it was consensual with women who didn't work for him, they did not like come forward to say this. Like someone else just is aware of this. And there was a New York Post article about it and maybe somewhere else. We're being facetious, obviously, because this is not scandalous
no.
at all.
Yeah.
It's not even wrong.
No,
it's not.
No.
It's not a problem. I don't.
Sure. Yeah, in the hierarchy of like possible sexual scandals you could have.
It's not bad.
Right, this doesn't even clear the ball. I mean,
I don't like what is the scandal? I'm missing it.
Yeah.
You're allowed he could date a lady. I mean, it's not wrong. I mean, as repellent as I find it, you know, my tastes aren't for anyone, but
yeah. Yeah, I mean,
But people are literally going off on him like, oh, we knew it. We saw it all along. Another Swalwell just waiting for this to... Has everybody lost their mind? The bad thing about Graham Plantner was that he raped someone, allegedly. broke into her house, held her down, and had his way with her, allegedly.
Yeah.
Without her permission.
Pretty bad.
Twisted somebody's arm and locked her in a room, allegedly. Like... Force,
yeah,
coercion, rape. It's not if it's consensual. It's not. He wasn't married at the time. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. It is. It's illegal to be a heterosexual man now.
Yeah,
I thought
Trump's election would change this, but
no.
The Democratic Party is still disciplining their own. So,
yeah. I thought it was okay women again.
Who is? I mean, I assume this is all cynical. Politics from conservatives,
yeah.
Republicans, they're the ones.
Well, shame on any conservative who is endorsing this for 5 seconds because
yeah.
it's craven and ludicrous
yeah,
to pretend there's anything wrong with this at all.
People, who is the congresswoman who had to resign after sleeping with her staffers?
Oh.
Katie Hill?
Oh, you have a good memory. Katie
yeah.
Hill, I think.
Yes.
Let me confirm that real quick. Katie Hill, threesome, hot.
Robbie, it's saved. You all have multiple pages of the safe already. You don't have to
yeah,
get this
Katie
whole
Hill.
Rigmarole.
Yeah,
yeah
she
people
was...
were trying to say that this was the same thing because she slept with staffers as well. The big distinction, of course,
those
is
are
that
her staffers.
Her staffers.
Yeah, you can't sleep for... I mean, it's not illegal. It's just like unethical.
It's
a
form.
Workplace violation.
Yeah, it's bad form.
You should get fired if you do it.
Yeah.
Or disciplined,
yeah.
whatever.
Censured.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Not sent to prison.
Right. But
I mean,
this...
it's weird in Congress because it's like members of Congress are not, you know, don't have an HR. They're appointed by the people. They're selected by the people. They're
right.
Not,
right.
They're not hired by a boss and fired from an HR procedure.
Right.
So it's a little.
So you kind of have to do this thing if it becomes a scandal in the media and then
right.
people take action. But yeah, there's no there
yeah.
when it comes
I mean,
to
I
this.
Defended. I think I defended Katie Hill, too, at the time.
Yeah.
Because I was like, why not?
Yeah.
Might have been wrong about that one.
If it's a direct report, again,
yeah,
that introduces all sorts of
yeah,
problems.
You shouldn't do that.
I assume this will blow over relatively quickly.
Yeah.
Both given.
What if there are more women?
No.
Who he slept with.
No, stop this. I mean, I assume what happened here.
And they did the thing, too, about the age difference, the taking advantage of a vulnerable, because she was 20. five or something, I think.
Your brain is still developing.
Yeah, right? Until you're 92, your brain, brain is still developing and you can't properly consent to sex. This is the fucked up world we live in.
This
is getting ridiculous.
I assume what happened was, you know, these journalists, after all the Swalwell stuff comes out, you know, they're like, okay, now here's the, go get Ruben Gallego because we hear things about him. And this is what they turned up, and they're like, all right, well, I guess we got to run with it. Yeah. Mm. So I assume that's what happened here. But yeah.
Any conservative who, again, who correctly objected to Me Too overreach needs to clearly recognize the manifestations of this here. Actually, another example of this, I saw, we can play this clip of Mamdani, you know, End Wokeness, that Twitter account that is interesting. They clipped Mamdani talking about sexual assault statistics in New York City. Let's play that.
And what I think is important to know is a lot of the increase in rape also comes from an expanded definition of what counts as rape, as well as survivors coming forward for acts that took place years prior.
So there he is. So that was Mamdani saying that, well, it looks like they're up, the statistics, but it's actually because we've started calculating these things differently, and it's some old accusations coming to light. And they're, and like, I saw him being dragged by all the conservatives saying, this is Mamdani's Islamofascist New York, where everyone's just being raped all the time. Yeah. Listening, like, but he's completely right, obviously. Yeah. I know it without... Without doing any research in the actual situation at all, I'm sure that he's right. Yeah. That it looks up because they did change the way they counted this, because there was a big argument going back a couple of years about affirmative consent and how, like, rape would be counted and defined in New York specifically.
Yeah.
And I think my side lost that one. So it would not at all surprise me if it looks
numbers
like...
Numbers are up. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, he's...
And I don't like, you know, Mamdani.
No, of course
not. And it is Islamofascism or whatever, but...
Yeah, but this is the problem of, you know, dumb people commanding so much of the discourse is you can't distinguish between actual scandals and alleged scandals, right?
Like raping someone...
Bad.
Dating someone consensually.
Even worse.
Nailed it. Nailed it. Let's all live in monasteries as monks and no more sex... No more sex with women.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that would probably do a lot of people good.
Just get closer to your God.
Yeah, a monastic revival. Yeah, you know, I think that would
that's
that would
what we
a
need,
lot of
monasteries.
People. Yeah. I do wish that was more of an option. And I mean, obviously, anyone can go join a monastery if they want. But it was like, you know, in like the Byzantine Empire or whatever, you know, you get turfed out of power. Yeah. You have some sort of scandal. Monasteries, that's where you'd go, right? That's where you go cool your heels. And I wish we had... Because, like, right now, right, you suffer some scandal, right? And then you're just kind of, like, unpersoned, right?
Yeah.
And then your only option is either to, like, completely disappear, but with no, you know, kind of, like, redemption arc. Or you have to make kind of an embarrassing comeback where, you know, you're an actor or a politician, you know, you lose your office, you lose some movie roles, and you just have to, like, wait for it to die down. And then try again, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if we had, you know, a little more robust pipeline of, you know, you did something bad, and here's one way you can, you know, repair your own soul and your reputation. And monasteries, I think, would do that.
It also just seems so random who survives these things or who comes back. Like, I was thinking the other day about Kevin Spacey, who I think was a tremendous actor. And has been in so many things I really liked.
Yeah.
And he was now, he's a non-person. He's unpersoned. And he's actually won all of the legal situations he's been put through, I think, at tremendous financial cost. He's ruined. I saw him on Piers Morgan. So he's not totally unpersoned. He's been on Piers Morgan. Weeping about just he's financially ruined. He had to sell his house. He had to sell everything to... pay for his defense at these trials that he's won. He was accused of some pretty serious stuff. Some of them, again, just, you know, gut check on the credibility level seemed a little implausible to me. Others seemed pretty plausible to me. So I'm not here defending him or saying I think he's totally innocent or whatever. I don't know. But you compare that to someone like And then I was at in Vegas. I went and saw Lindsay, my co-host of Rising, was there. We did a debate, and then she got tickets to Cirque du Soleil, Michael Jackson themed.
Ah.
And this show, by the way, was great. It went through like, it was like 2 hours of dancing to Michael Jackson, like amazing. You know what Cirque du Soleil is? It's mm-hmm. like this cool acrobatics pyrotechnic show with Michael Jackson music, and Michael Jackson music is great. And you're still allowed to enjoy his music. This is a giant Vegas hotel that mm-hmm. has a Michael Jackson branded entertainment thing. Michael Jackson himself is dead, but his name lives on in making, you know, money for people. And he was accused of some pretty awful stuff that he also beat the charges for the most part.
For the most part.
So what? I don't know.
It is a little...
I have no final thought. I was just reflecting on these things.
Yeah. So, I mean,
is it because Michael Jackson's music is just so good that we're all just kind of like,
I don't know. I think part of it is it's probably easier for a musician to overcome some of this stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. a pop star, it's a little more complicated, but for an actor, you know, you are seeing that person in their face mm-hmm. in the art, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that makes the scandal a little more present in any of the media you try to consume.
I see.
Whereas music, it's a little more separated from the artists themselves, right? And so you can listen to Thriller without having to see Michael Jackson and think of all the horrible things he was accused of. I mean, it's a little
maybe.
Different, obviously.
Because... I don't know. He's a very visual, iconically visual performer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, I think...
And he's just so big that it's not... Like, people forget that if you go, like, at the height of Michael Jackson mania, you could go anywhere in the world and they knew who Michael Jackson was somehow.
Okay, so who do you think would be the biggest star who has since become unpersoned by an accusation or, you know, scandal? And maybe justly so, you know, mm-hmm. or at least the accusations were correct, but, like, someone whose media you can't really consume anymore.
I don't know. I mean, Louis C.K. feels like that to me, but he was not that. He's not anywhere near the astronomical height of.
Oh, but see that kind of and you know he still does stand up and stuff too. Yeah. So he's had a bit of a and nowhere near. I mean, he was an A-lister, you know, when the stuff came out. But that kind of speaks to my point, though. Right?
Roseanne, who I've interviewed before, and I felt more sympathetic to. I mean. She said a lot of crazy things over the years, and she's kind of crazy. The thing that got her actually canceled was, in fact, a little unfair to her, that Valerie Jarrett thing.
Yeah.
Where it was portrayed as if she had likened Valerie Jarrett, who's a black woman, mm-hmm. to an ape, which is something that's grossly offensive and racist. But what she had actually
grossly
tweeted—
Grossly offensive and racist.
Very bad. Shouldn't do it. She had tweeted that— She was like Planet of the Apes. She did, and she says she has no idea what Valerie Jarrett looked like. She thought she was an Iranian woman, and she was saying that it's like authoritarian and you're something like that. Yeah. It was not. She had no idea what she looked like. She was not making that claim.
Yeah,
and I believe her honestly that she had no idea that that's what it was.
Yeah,
and there was no. You know, she was in the midst of that big kind of revival, the Connors show or whatever. And there was no one asked, like, can you explain this? What mm-hmm. They're just like, you're done. Goodbye.
Yeah, sure.
It was all over in 24 sure. hours.
No, you know who I would pick, actually?
Who?
Kanye.
Yes.
He isn't quite.
I kind of think he deserves it.
Being unpersoned?
Yeah.
I actually, of all these, I would be more of a defender of Kanye.
Interesting. And you're a big fan of Kanye, though.
I do actually enjoy his music. I've
never enjoyed it, so I don't care. That's
oh, really? Actually, I've been listening to a lot of Kanye lately.
Okay.
Yeah, I do like, I mostly listen to rock and heavy metal, but I've been getting more and more into rap and R&B, and Kanye has some really good ones. I do think that there is, I'm not defending, you know, any things he said about mm-hmm. the Jews or whatever mm-hmm. else, right? But there does seem to be something that's a little cruel and unfair of, you know, his reputation, and you listen to his lyrics or whatever else, right? Like, he self-acknowledges, like, I'm a crazy person, right? And for a while, it's like, wow, this tortured genius, you know, he's able to produce, you know, he's a crazy guy, but listen to all this great music that he produces, right? But then that Torture Genius fires off some other crazy things that don't happen to be good songs. You're like, oh yeah, wow, he's too crazy to listen to. That's no good. It just seems kind of, it seems a little ungrateful to use someone's, you know, to appreciate someone's insanity when, you know, when that is, you know, the source of their creativity. And then when that insanity, of course, produces a bunch of other terrible things, you're like, oh no, we're done with this person. You know what I mean?
Well, it's kind of interesting to even compare these crimes, because on one level, the things that Kanye has said are pretty bad about Jewish people. I mean, he's just, on some level, I think he's just mentally ill.
And, yeah, well, exactly,
so
right, yeah.
What responsibility, like, I don't, people said he's an anti-Semite, and I'm like,
I think he's just too crazy
His insanity manifests sometimes as anti-Semitic remarks, as does every crazy person in the street.
His insanity manifests sometimes as anti-Semitic remarks, and sometimes it manifests as like a great album.
Brilliance.
Right?
But is saying bad things, and again, I'm not a big Kanye fan, and I think, yeah, I'm just not a big fan. I don't think he should be banned from performing in like London or whatever as they did. That's insane to me. But, right, just saying bad things is not as bad as
doing
bad touching
things.
Kids,
yeah.
right? Which
of course,
is what some of the people were talking
about.
Which
is about the worst thing that you can do, yeah.
So it's interesting that, but maybe it's like, we don't know for sure, or there's some reasonable doubt about whether the bad sexual things happen with the other people we're describing.
Yeah.
Whereas there's no doubt about what Kanye said, so maybe that's why it gets, I don't know.
I think, I mean, the Michael Jackson thing, I think, it's a product of he was a massively, probably like one of the most popular artists of all time. The accusations came out well past his, like the stuff everyone loves him for. And then also the fact that he's dead, right? So it's...
He wasn't dead when it was coming out.
No, that's true. But I mean like, but now, right? It's less fresh or current or whatever. Yeah, on the Kevin Spacey thing, I think sometimes the reason that... the accusations stick and people get turfed out of polite society is because there's a lot of people in, like, you know, someone with a Harvey Weinstein thing or whatever, right? Where it's like, everyone kind of knows what this guy is about. And then it becomes public and it's like, okay, finally we don't have to, like, it's not an open secret anymore. It's just open. And we don't have to deal with this person who I already knew was a bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah. The Harvey Weinstein thing is...
No, oh, your revisionism really knows no bounds, does it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just leave it at that.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the war between the states.
Okay. it was about states' rights.
Yeah. The tariff.
The Holocaust, whatever happened there.
Terrible.
Okay. What is? Oh, Lindsey Graham died. Should we? I've had a lot. I've talked about him on a lot of different things. So go off, King.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? I do have.
I'll take a back seat.
A little riff on this, if I may.
excuse me.
So we today live in a world. So it used to be when you'd say the year, right? This is still happening in 2007. You know, something bad would happen. You're like, I thought we were past this. You know, and then it became, well, that's 2017 for you. You know what I mean? The world just seemed so crazy and weird that the date was just a reminder of how exhaustingly insane everything is, right?
The misery of your own existence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. So to relate this to Lindsey Graham, no, so, you know, and obviously a lot of this gets put on Trump, who says crazy things in public all the time, right? But I remember a while ago, this was in the 2010s, right? There was a budget standoff, you know, Tea Party, whatever. They were holding up the...
Oh, talk about the good old days.
Yeah. Well, they were holding up the defense authorization bill that year, right? Mm-hmm. And Lindsey Graham literally suggested the military should come and occupy D.C. until they pass the defense budget. So he is, in effect, calling for a coup, right? I mean, I don't think he was particularly serious about this, but that's an insane thing to say. And I know this because Reason Magazine and excoriate him at the time for this.
Forgot about that one. Thanks for reminding people.
And so what I want to remind people is people who seem like maybe a, you know, the icon of a more genteel, more normal politics were also insane in their own way. And our recency bias means that we forget and downplay that and think that the times today are much more insane than they are. Lindsey Graham, his entire career, has wanted to bomb somewhere. At least he wanted one bombing to be going on at all times. Mm-hmm. Matthew Petty, our foreign policy writer, you know, who's great. He had, I think, an appropriately critical obituary of Lindsey Graham after his sudden death. And yeah, the guy was, you know, however, you know, it's obviously every death is a tragedy on some dimension. But yeah, the man was a warmonger, and his influence on government and foreign policy was not positive. And so while I'm sorry for his loss, you know, his family's loss, it's better that he's not out there influencing policy.
A lover of the game.
A lover of the game. That's true.
He was not corrupt. He didn't do it because defense contractors paid him. He did it because he loved it.
He loved it, yeah.
He thought it was the best idea ever. He loved traveling around the world. He loved being in the Senate. He kind of had it off. Golly gee, look at me, Ma.
He was a character. He was very entertaining.
Yeah.
And so we can appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I don't know if you were raised on like The Daily Show too, right? Mm-hmm. But like, he was like the go-to insane conservative for a long time, right? And then, I mean, he's an interesting foreign policy hawk in that he managed to stay on Trump's good side, right?
Brilliantly. And in fact, not only stay on his good side, but move Trump in his direction.
Yeah.
At the time that he passed away, Trump is launching and engaging in the frustrating war that he has long advised and wanted. So
yeah, he got it.
What a nice send-off. He got it.
Yeah.
This is exactly what he wanted. Trump campaigned on doing not this and is doing this in part due to Lindsey Graham's influence.
Malign influence, but influence nonetheless.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
He
had an interesting line. This is from an old profile, but, you know, resurfaced after his death, where he says, you know, people think the key to getting on Trump's good side is to flatter him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mistake, because then Trump doesn't respect you because he thinks you're just like a groveling worm.
Yes.
Instead, his trick was just say Obama would have done the opposite
of
what he wanted to do, right?
Got it.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, what do we... Did you have anything you wanted to say about the suggestions that he was assassinated by Russia and or Iran?
They're not like totally ridiculous. I mean, sounds like it's not the case.
Yeah.
And they should do they're doing a medical review. And if it turned out he has, you know, some poison dart lodged in him, then it was probably Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Russia has done things like that, not to U.S. Diplomats, but to dissidents.
Yeah.
So, and he was just returning from Ukraine. He was touring a drone facility that I think got blown up the second he left.
Oh, wow.
Which felt a little close to home since I was in Ukraine last month. Also touring, I don't think I toured the one that was leveled, but touring the drone facilities. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And the drones are cheap to make, so it doesn't like set back the war effort dramatically or anything. But
you're open. You're open to this possibility.
It could be.
Yeah. Crazier things have happened, I guess.
I mean, Russia is in a frustrating position right now in that war. I don't think Iran would do that necessarily. Russia has done things like this in the past, not to U.S. people, and Russia is in a very frustrating position in the war, as I said. Well, I was talking about it with Jason as you were out. They're losing like. Just it's a massive number of troops.
It's remarkable.
And they're not gaining territory.
I think they're, it's like 30,000
a month.
Yeah, so that's like, for context, America lost 50,000 soldiers in the entire Vietnam War.
Yeah.
So every 2 months, Russia's experiencing their own Vietnam.
Yeah, a new Russian joins the, you know, signs up. Because it's not conscription. They're all signing up.
Yeah.
Because their family gets paid. Mm. You sign up, you take a train to the front lines, and you're dead in 8 days.
Yeah.
That's the average. This is crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely crazy.
So you're basically just buying a life insurance policy and
yes.
going and dying.
Yeah. Which works. Which desperate, financially unstable, incautious young men throughout all of history have signed up to do crazy things like this. So it's not, because people go, why would you ever do that? I mean, why would you strap a suicide vest to yourself? Well, your family gets paid. Like, why would you go west and join some outlaw gang and rob people and then, you know, get hung from the neck until dead at age 18? People have done, like, yep, dudes be doing crazy stuff. That's not actually surprising at all.
Yeah, something I've changed my mind on over the course of this long and bloody conflict is Ukraine's chances of actually just, like, holding out and
100%.
Basically securing victory.
Yes.
Because the suggestion is, and, you know, I'm always skeptical of these claims because you always just got to wonder how much is just neocon propaganda or whatever. But the suggestion is, you know, okay, you're killing 30,000 Russians a month, right? Russia's a huge country. If you get that up to 50,000 or whatever, then eventually Russia does have to do conscription.
Yes.
And then domestic support for the war collapses, right, and then they have to cut a deal, right? Right. Yeah, my assumption at the beginning of the war was that Ukraine's just going to get bowled over, right? That didn't happen. Yeah. They've held out for a long time. But then my next assumption was there's no way these guys can keep it going. Russia's way bigger. Ukraine is a lot smaller of a country, even though it's a sizable country. Eventually, you're going to run out and you wish you'd just made peace, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago. That doesn't seem to be the case either. It seems like they can actually bleed them more than they're getting bled.
The troop advantage is negated.
And the other thing, and they've actually come up with, it's kind of remarkable, just like the the mechanics of drone war and drone manufacturing. But then even, I don't know if you've been reading about like their sort of market-based system for the units. Yeah, the army is like trading drones around. It actually kind of reminds me of the system like food banks have for trading around donations, which is like a semi-market-based system, right? Where it's like the success, you know, if you have a higher kill ratio, then you get more credits to get more drones, right? And it's like, okay, that's actually pretty smart. It's, you know, for a country that, you know, and a lot of this is, I think, still true, but the stereotype of just being completely corrupt and dysfunctional, that they're actually able to operate a pretty high-tech war machine like this is impressive. The other thing I've also changed my mind on, and this is something I think we've talked about on previous episodes too, is that like Putin is not, he's ride or die on this, right?
For sure. That's the main thing.
His whole worldview is that Ukraine must be part of Russia.
Correct.
There's no like, I need to take a little bit of territory to protect Russian speakers, right, or, you know, show NATO not to expand or whatever. Right. It's like he is ideologically committed to crushing this country's independence.
There's no deal on the table for people. Like, no, if Russia offered a deal that, okay, we're going to keep the territory we occupy and then the war will be over and there will be no further hostilities with Ukraine.
Take it, yeah, sure.
Then, I would advise them to take that, but that deal is not on the table. It's not being offered. And Russia already controls that territory, so they could just, but they want to subsume all of Ukraine.
Right, the idea, the Ukraine
which Trump found out.
Yeah.
Because he tried to negotiate a peace, mm-hmm, and he moved, the Ukrainian side was a little, Zelensky was not willing to consider that outcome, and he moved Zelensky in a more reasonable direction, but Putin didn't move in any direction.
No, so. And this is not, this should not be taken as me endorsing U.S. intervention, right, or anything like that. I just think that there's a naive view, and I held this view, and so I was naive too, that there is a, you know, real politic deal to be cut here that would end the war, and I don't think there is.
There isn't.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we, you know, American taxpayer dollars go there. Although I would have rather spent the $300 billion we just lost to accomplish what?
In Iran?
Somewhere against an adversary that actually could maybe threaten us.
Right, opposed to this. These are the borders.
The Middle East is the black hole that just sucks all the time, attention, money, and resources. Like, I think you can make an argument, not that like neoconservatism is somehow suddenly correct or something, but our big adversaries, China and Russia, have become more threatening over the course of our lifetimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've moved in very bad directions. And that might compel we should make foreign policy choices with that in mind. But we're still just messing around in that desert with all these jokers. Why? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you why. It's because it doesn't matter. That's why it goes on, right? Because nothing bad can really happen, right? The Iraq war was a disaster up and down, right? Completely useless, terrible, never should have happened. Nothing to us, you know, I don't mean to be insensitive to the, you know, thousands of American soldiers that died, not to mention all the Iraqi casualties, but like, in like great power schemes, it didn't matter.
Well, that's why,
right?
I keep taking umbrage at the idea when they say, even though things are not going well with this Iran conflict and we're not getting anything we want about it, when they say like we're losing, like, okay, well, they haven't blown up any of
we're not really trying.
We've lost nothing, so
we're failing in the way a great power normally fails, right, where it's like we want to do this on the cheap and we can't really accomplish our objectives on the cheap.
But then it speaks to, but you go back to the Korean War,
mm-hmm,
we blew up every building in North Korea. Yeah. By the end of that war, our planes would take off and just drop bombs into the ocean because there was not a single thing left to hit. The whole thing was leveled.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't mean we won the war.
No.
So then what is that even? Winning is like meaningless on that level. We're not willing, because we don't want to, because we're not monsters, to like murder every single person in the entire country.
Yeah, it's right. It doesn't matter enough. We're a giant imperial power, and this is a border skirmish, right. And we'll take some licks and then eventually decide that we're bored of it, right? Whereas, a conflict with Russia or China matters a lot more and is a lot more risky, and therefore we actually are a little more cautious in approaching these conflicts.
Well, what I've said, we could learn a thing or two from the Ukrainian defense if it actually came to a kind of like invasion of China or China invading us or something. It would be the giant standing army would meet with the same problems that Russia's meeting with in terms of drones right now.
Right.
I mean, there's technological changes constantly.
Yeah.
So that might not be the case, but it'd be interesting.
Yeah, people always talk about this with Taiwan, is we just need to, like, basically Taiwan's military needs to be the ultimate, like, Red Dawn defense force of just like, oh, well, you know, you'll just do endless drone and guerrilla war and they won't be able to project power across the strait there. Tanner Greer, who's an interesting writer on these things, he had an essay a while ago where it's like, the problem with this is that because Taiwan is very sensitive about its weird independent status, right? It wants all the trappings of a, you know, independent power with a standing military. It wants the tanks and the planes, right? So it's not willing to convert its force into like a semi-guerrilla paramilitary force. So
I've become way more enthusiastic about Taiwan's defense for just mysterious reasons that no one can ever properly explain. I have no idea why.
You've been honeypotted. That's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
Yeah.
What else? Any other wars out there? Let me see. Oh, Hochul announced
A data center moratorium.
I thought you might want to comment on that. Dumb biatch. Can we say that? That's kind of insensitive.
It is insensitive to the data centers.
They have feelings.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why I'm on the data center side. You know, when they take over, I'll be one of the good ones. Right?
I want to be the Gaius Baltar of data centers. Like in the Cylon's good graces.
Right. We will get to retire to a holodeck or whatever while the rest of humanity is
to be serviced
enslaved in the cobalt
by robot prostitutes. That's Gaius Baltar's fate for a while.
Okay.
Anyway, it's interesting to me that the anger toward data centers is very right and left.
Yeah. It's
but
a
it's
populist
so
issue.
Far only manifesting itself politically in terms of basically Democrats caving to it. As far as I can tell.
Yeah, by and large, that's correct. I mean, there's been some local, you know, like red, more rural areas where many of these data centers are built where they'll pass zoning restrictions or try to shoot down the construction. But no, I mean, it is funny. There's a populist backlash, right? But like actually elected Republicans still understand that like the growth machine is good and building things and the economy is good. And so we're a little less willing to impoverish everyone in response to ridiculous backlashes, whereas Democrats are not. They're happy to slow down the growth machine, and they're also much more wedded to even, you know, someone like Hochul, who's not, is a liberal, but not like an insane left-wing person.
Right.
I think she would be happy to allow more growth, you know, people to make one more dollar. But even so, you know, you're stuck with this coalition of interest groups that everyone gets their cut, right? And so I think that's why blue states are always in such a pickle when it comes to abundance issues that are in the vogue, when it comes to building housing or infrastructure or whatever else.
So I'm skeptical that abundance will ever be the agenda of, or like a politically
because everyone in their coalition wants a slice of the growth, and when you start divvying up the pie then you get less growth, right? Whereas Republicans are just like, you know, sometimes Republicans for like ideological reasons or whatever will be very hostile to a particular sector, right? But once they get it, then they're like, let it rip, right? Whereas Democrats, even if they get it, they're like, okay, we still got to make sure everyone gets paid here.
Yeah, Republicans mostly just do lip service to populism in very showy kind of ways, but then vote basically the same, at least at the local and state level.
yeah,
the same way they did. You know, at the national level, if Trump says, no, we're doing real populism, we're doing tariffs, we're tariffing everyone to death, then national Republicans got to be like, oh, great idea, even though none of them agree with that.
Compare.
But at the state level where you don't, we're like, no, we're still going to cut taxes regulation.
Compare Texas and California, right? Yeah. A lot of California Democrats have seen the light on letting more housing get built, right? Yeah. But there's still have this whole system of we got to convince the interest groups who still help me get elected. You know, I want more housing, but I still got to, you know, make sure the unions don't hate me, and I still got to make sure the tenant activists don't hate me. And so I got to give them something. And so even though they've seen the light, they squeeze a lot less juice from their, you know, reforms. Whereas Texas, like, you know, there's plenty of NIMBY Republicans in Texas, right? But like the ones who get it, they're like, yeah, sure. Fuck yeah. Get rid of zoning. Who cares? Yeah. And in fact, in counties in Texas, the counties aren't allowed to zone already. Mm. Right. So it's just like it's already such a more favorable environment. Yeah, I do wonder, tell me if you think this is correct, right? You say Republicans pay lip service to kind of like some of the economic populism, but then don't really follow through. I wonder if that's because they have like they can lean so much harder on the other like cultural populism mm-hmm. issues that they don't really have to give any ground on the economics, right? So yes. they can cynically be like, look at all the trans people and yes. women's sports, right? Yes. Yeah, that's my populist cause. Yeah. They have a Quran.
DEI is just die.
They right. have a Quran in the public library,
yes.
right?
Yes.
They can do that and then, you know, yes. permit 16,000 data centers tomorrow, yeah. right?
That is so correct.
Yeah.
And that might just be the trade we all have to live with. Really dumb cultural commentary, but we're not all going to be impoverished.
I'm still holding out for... libertarianism.
Oh, free markets,
free minds and free markets. Yeah,
wouldn't that be good?
Could have had it. Could have had it.
We have it a little bit, in some ways.
You know, it's
on tech stuff. We mostly have it.
America, all things considered, is still doing pretty darn good.
I was in Vegas for Freedom Fest. That feels like a very libertarian place. A friend of mine, a big supporter of Reason, who lives there now, was saying that it's the quintessential libertarian city.
Yes.
In terms of vice, at least. Maybe not in terms
yeah,
of
that's,
sovereign planet. That's but also true. Kind of in terms of, must be in some kind of, or maybe it's just zoned to be this way, where just like anything goes.
No, I mean, Nevada still has plenty of planning regulations that, mm-hmm. You know, inhibit construction. I mean, it's obviously it would be better than California or whatever. Mm-hmm. I do think Vegas would be pretty easy to reorganize mm-hmm. along anarcho-capitalist lines, mm-hmm. right? You know, you look at a city like New York or DC, you have a lot of intermingling of private property and the public space, right? Uh-huh. Whereas Vegas is new enough and the way it's built, it's basically just all gated subdivisions,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
So that would be pretty easy to just privatize the roads in front of them and then
well, you
boom,
can't have,
you're basically at
You can't really have outdoor public space because it's so hot.
Right. So there is no, yeah, the public realm is so inhospitable to human life that everything kind of
flee
has
from
to,
one fief yeah. to another.
Everything does have to happen into semi-feudal yeah. Homeowners associations, yeah.
It's a kind of fun maze to negotiate when I'm trying to figure out like, okay, I have to go to this convention center. And can I go through these 18 buildings just like intern? Like, how long do I have to be outside?
Right. Yeah.
For?
Sure. It feels like kind of being in a spaceship, right?
Yeah.
Or a space
yeah,
station. Totally.
Yeah. I can only breathe outside for right. up to 3 minutes.
Yeah. This is actually my most liberal opinion, though, is that I like the East Coast city more than a place like Vegas. Like, I used to live there during the pandemic, right? And everything is set up basically. You know, all the roads are set up. The idea that you would walk anywhere is ludicrous,
right?
And so everything is set up just to keep the cars going,
yeah.
right? I mean, given how hot it is, you
can't walk outside.
Yeah.
It's gotta be cars.
But it's so frustrating where like, you know, so for instance, if, you know, you're on 17th Street here or whatever, I go to the grocery store and then, oh, you know, on the other corner, there's a coffee shop. I'll just walk across the street to the coffee shop, right? You know, quick check, make sure no traffic's coming. In Vegas, if you're in this strip mall on this corner, and you want to go to the one kitty corner to it, it's you gotta get on the arterial, you gotta go down a mile, you gotta find a place where you're allowed to make a U-turn, or you gotta do a whole swing around the block, and it's like a 10-minute process just to get 40 feet.
Well, they won't
the
let you just run on foot. They wouldn't even let you just run across the street because there's the sidewalks. in, in the main area, at least of Vegas, have like fences to stop you from doing
that. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The actual.
You got to go up an escalator over a bridge to get over.
It's an inhuman, overwhelming machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that aspect of it, I don't find too great.
I had another good time, though. On the way back, oh, here's something I wanted to complain about. Speaking of some old man yells at cloud type things.
No clouds
in
Vegas.
That's right. I got the luggage bait and switch. I have gotten better at, I always used to overpack for things and I bring tons of hairspray. And so I'd always check a suitcase even when it was totally unnecessary. And my better half yelled at me about that. He says, a waste of money. You got to learn to be more compact. So I've been more compact lately. Mm-hmm. Take a little carry-on suitcase. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And that's better because you save time in baggage claim, mm-hmm. which for some reason in DC, at DCA, baggage claim takes forever. I don't know why. I don't know why the Reagan Airport has not mastered the art of like transporting baggage from the plane to the thing in like less than 45 minutes. They just can't do it.
That's no way to honor the Gipper.
It's no way to honor him. But I'm waiting in Milwaukee. It was like a connection flight, and they come to me and say, "Oh, the plane is too full. We're gonna have to, you know, take that, and you'll get it." You know, they put it in like the bridge area when you're done. Like, okay, that's fine. Then they take it and they go, no, actually, you'll get in a baggage claim. Like, dare you? And I was so mad. And then, yes, I had to wait for 45 minutes at Reagan.
Sons of bitches.
So mad.
Yeah.
They got me.
That's really irritating.
They got me. It's so irritating.
Yeah. I'm much more tolerant. I don't know if you're the same way. I'm much more tolerant of difficulties on my way to a destination than on the way back.
Yeah.
Once I'm done with the trip, We're done. I want to be home, right?
Well, the way coming back from Vegas is difficult because you do the time change is punishing. So all of a sudden it's 10 o'clock at night and I got to get up for hosting my show Monday morning. And it's like, I got to get to bed here and I'm waiting for my luggage.
Because of the time change, you have headaches, you're nauseous, you're dehydrated.
Yeah. Still got some drugs in the system.
Because of the time change, yeah. Yeah, it's no
want to get out of the state before that body's found.
But it happens in Vegas. Turned out it was fine, but I thought was going to be a real luggage nightmare. I went to Mexico recently, so why we had my inferior co-host Jason here to talk to you guys. So we get on the plane. We're about to fly, and then the pilot comes on and says they've completely shut down DFW, which was my connecting hub, because of weather. And so, we're just gonna have to sit on the plane for 2 hours and wait for the go ahead. Like, oh, great. But then they're like, okay, actually, we're just gonna bring you back to the gate. So we go back to the gate. I had gate checked. I normally just carry a carry on as well, right? But I had to gate check it, right?
You have fewer hair care products than I do.
I do. Not zero. but I had to gate check it. So my bag is now on the plane, right? They get us off the plane. And I missed my connecting flight. And so they booked me on one at 7 a.m. the next morning from Dallas. And so it's like, oh, so this flight will leave eventually, but then I'm going to have to spend the whole night in the airport or get a hotel or whatever. Yeah, it was a whole mess, But then so I was talking to the lady at the gate and she's like, oh, or we could just rebook, you know, you live in D.C. We can just rebook everything for tomorrow. I'm like, oh, okay, perfect. That's great. I'm like, oh, wait, but my bag is on the plane. And there was a little bit of confusion because I was asking, like, will my bag go all the way to my destination? Do I have to pick it up in Dallas? What's going on there? And she thought I was asking, can I just get it off the plane? Which, of course, would be ridiculous. It's already in the cargo hold or whatever. And so I was like, well, what about my bag? And she's like, no. I'm like, wait, it's just gone?
It's gone.
It's gone. Just lost it? Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like they did used to lose bags more often, and that doesn't really happen anymore.
They got the QR codes. They're much better about scanning things. Yeah, I mean, that was a constant. Two things that don't really happen anymore that were constant sitcom bits was
lose
your bag at the at the airport, and then also the colors in your clothes bleed in the washer. A constant sitcom trope.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say you get to the hotel and the room's been double booked.
Oh, that was right.
Then you
got to
share a room with someone. That's
We're less homophobic. Yeah. And so I guess those jokes don't land as much, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles over the Thanksgiving break, and that's one of the bits there.
Yeah.
Steve Martin and John
Sharing Clancy. A bed.
Yeah, they have to share a bed. But it was kind of like that. Actually, that bit felt very dated. How very like dated. Horrified they were by it, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like today that just like wouldn't really. It would just be an irritation. It wouldn't be like sleeping in a bed with another man. That's, right, yeah. Oh, that's really gay.
Something like all men do in their adolescence. Yeah. And, like, camps and
yeah, mm-hmm.
field trips and blah blah blah. But
yeah, late
and
night,
some of us do in our
late
adulthood.
Night Berlin sex clubs. Yeah, it's not gay.
Yeah, it's not in Berlin. Be gay not to do it.
Yeah,
oh.
Berlin. Yeah,
travel humor. I played. you know, I always play video games on the plane basically until my Switch dies. And now some of the planes you can plug the Switch in so it never dies. I was going to play, I downloaded the new Final, or it's not new at all, but Final Fantasy VII has been remade like into three different video games. And I actually never even really, I kind of played Final Fantasy VII as a kid, but it was more my brother played it and I watched it, my younger brother. Mm-hmm. So I'm very familiar with Final Fantasy VII, even though I never actually played it. I played Final Fantasy IX and Final Fantasy X. So I downloaded this, but it's just like such an intimidating game. Like it's a Final Fantasy game, mm-hmm. right? I know I'm gonna have to like learn menu optimization and you know it's like it was intimidating, so instead I just played like Mega Man X over and over again, which is just a simple little game where you move your little robot character and he levels up his little robot powers and he shoots the bad robots. That's nice. And I've beaten this game and Mega Man X 2. I have a Mega Man X collection, all 8 games, and I just like replay them, and I've replayed them all 1,000 times, and I would just rather do that than I would like to play the Final Fantasy VII game. It's just, it's so intimidating. It's maybe because I'm an old man or something.
Like, can't learn more tricks.
I can't learn a new trick.
Damn.
I guess. So I'm just going through these Mega Man X games. And actually,
that's good. It'll calm you down a little bit.
I figured out a couple tricks. There's a couple out of the like things I wasn't able to get that I finally was able to get them. And so you can learn new tricks as an old dog or whatever, okay. Which is that you have to jump up this spike wall, but spikes kill you, even the robot. This never made sense to me, why a robot is killed by spikes automatically. Yeah. Like it's one hit, one spike dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you can cheat a little bit, because if an enemy damages you, you know this in video games, you're like your character like flickers and is invincible to further damage for like a second and a half. You know how that kind of works?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you let an enemy damage you, and then you jump up those spikes in the 1.5 seconds that you're damaged from the enemy, and you can cheat and get it.
Pretty sly. You sly
and
fox.
I'm in the plane. I went, yes! I was so excited to get that little life upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Proud of you.
It also had Mega Man X6, the sixth game. They get progressively bad and less well put together. Like even like the subtitles are... It's like a Asian misspelling type deal. Like they're supposed to be the Mavericks are the bad guys, the Maverick robots, and in the dialogue sometimes they're called the Irregulars.
Oh, yeah, it's like,
it's
bad
like mistranslated.
Yeah.
So like they put in like less and less effort to these games as it went on, and then they're just poorly designed the way some old video games are, where it's like just way too hard. Mm. Like you're just getting mobbed by these squid monster alien robot things. And I'm like, there's no way this would have ever been perceived as fair or possible or fun. They just totally phoned in this video game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mega Man X. What's the premise of that? What's going
Mega
on?
Man, so there was Mega Man series, which is he's a little robot guy fighting bad robots. Dr. Wily has the bad robots. And then Mega Man X was the sequel series where he was frozen in amber or something, and now he's been woken up, and it's just they invented robots, and it's a Terminator situation. Some of the robots went bad, they went Maverick, and you're one of the good robots and you're fighting the bad robots.
Okay.
And in Mega Man X, the bad robot leader is named Sigma. He's kind of cool looking. He's like this evil, tall, bald man with like a
Sigma male. Sigma grind set. Yeah.
Well, so
is that where that comes
when
from?
No, it's the other way around. When everyone's a Sigma, when that word came into vogue, that's just what I thought of. Like, I wonder if anyone else thought of Mega Man X.
Class.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds
good
fun.
Stuff.
Yeah. You been reading anything?
I have a gap right now. I need a new thing. I finished the Agatha Christie book I was working on. The Mirror Cracked from Side to Side.
Hmm.
It was another Miss Marple mystery. It was terrific. And now I have to decide whether I just fire up the next Miss Marple or if I read something else. I try to alternate.
Yeah.
So I'm taking recommendations if you think there's something I should
read. I just finished a science fiction book called Return from the Stars by Stanislaw Lem. He wrote Solaris, which I haven't read, but I've read another one of his books. It was pretty good. So it's about, you know, constant trope in science fiction is like stories based on like time dilation effects where you take a slower than light ship. And so you're on the ship for 10 years, but back on Earth, it's, you know, 120 years of time has passed. So he goes out on this dangerous mission, comes back to Earth, and everything has changed, right? And so it's about him readjusting society. What's interesting about it and made it feel kind of current is the big change on Earth is that everyone has been vaccinated against violence, basically, right? And so this felt current, which is funny because I was reading the introduction to the book was talking about how the author felt that this book was actually a failure because the, like, violence vaccine he thought was way too on the nose. But it actually, like, in today's society, it really works. A, because of, like, kind of, like, everyone is both, like, intrigued and terrified by him because he hasn't been vaccinated against the violence, right? And so he's, like, some people condescendingly treat him like a zoo animal, right? And then other people are just completely terrified of him or just see him as an anachronism. So that's part of his inability to adjust to safe space culture, right? Everyone's kind of like soft and spending all their time on weird theater or whatever else. And so, yeah, there was like an element of like woke safetyism is like the society comes back to, which is an interesting element. Even it's not really presented as a dystopia, right? It's just like alienating. So that was interesting. The other really interesting thing in the book is... It talks a little bit about the history of how they got to the point where society, because it's not like it doesn't pass on genetically. So each generation has to be vaccinated as children. And there's like a whole riff on like anti-vaccine rebels, right, who oppose this, right? And we're like assassinating vaccination doctors and whatever else, which all, I mean, we haven't really seen that in, you know, modern society, but like that also felt very current given the, you know, fights about the COVID vaccine, right? And just like this idea that you might want to accept a little more danger and adventure at the risk of a little less safety and comfort, right? Still a very hot topic. Mm. The one thing, I guess I'll say spoilers just in case you do pick up this book. The one thing that did feel very dated about it is there is an extended sequence where he like effectively like kidnaps a woman and makes her his wife. So, and it is very ambiguous how down she is for this arrangement. So,
but she can't like resist because it's violence?
Or? No, it's again, spoilers. Don't listen if you want to read this book, and I would recommend it. Basically, she's married, right? And they're staying in the same house together, or whatever. Basically, she is terrified that if she resists him, he will kill her husband.
Ah.
Yeah.
So. A real Ruben Gallego situation.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Oh, exactly.
I kid.
Yeah, no, he is ridiculous. The Graham Platner that universe. So that was really good. I'm reading now Citizens, which is a history of the French Revolution, Simon Sharma.
Ooh.
It's a huge, giant tome, and it is interesting and fun to read, and I find the French Revolution endlessly fascinating.
It's great.
You know, they say there's Civil War dads and World War II history dads. French Revolution, all the way.
For sure.
The thing that I don't like about this book is that Simon Sharma is just like a gigantic lib, right? And so he has all these lines that are either annoying or patently untrue. Okay, so like the annoying one is in the lead up to the French Revolution, Louis XVI had a finance minister named Turgot, who was basically like a proto-libertarian, right? His solution to France's budget problems was, we're going to get rid of all these feudal restrictions of guilds and internal trade barriers. We're going to have a free market, and that will boost economic growth, and that will raise tax revenues, right? If they had adopted this platform, there would have been no revolution. If France had adopted a free market in the 1770s, they would be fine, right? Or 1780s, whenever he was finance minister. And he just has these like snippy lines where it's like, this supply side economics works about as well as it does today. And it's like, so it works pretty well.
So it works pretty well.
Yeah. So that was super. That was super frustrating. And then he has another line. Again, this is just like a throwaway line, so I'm trying not to like focus too much on it because much of the book is fascinating. But he has this throwaway line where he's talking about, you know, one of his perspectives is that pre-revolutionary France was in fact very dynamic and modern, right? Everyone was kind of high on the Enlightenment, the stereotype of a sclerotic and reactionary monarchy trying to resist change at all costs is not true. And I think that's where a lot of historians have landed now.
Yeah.
But he has, he's so in, you know, to
it's
make-
It's true in Russia, not in France.
Right, exactly, exactly. but to make this point, he's talking about how literacy rates are actually pretty high, right? And one of the pieces of evidence he summons for that is that, you know, even in like the working class neighborhoods of Paris, you know, 80% of people could sign their names to marriage certificates, right? Showing they could at least write their names, suggest that they have some basic literacy. Right. And so he has some line where he's like, so in pre-revolutionary Paris, literacy rates were much higher than they are in late 20th century the United States.
It's just not true.
That's just completely
absolutely
false.
Not true.
That is completely false. So I don't even know what to do with that. God. And it's frustrating because, again, like, while, you know, this is a recognized like classic of French revolutionary history, right? But it's always tough when you come across these glaring falsehoods and then ask yourself the question, can I trust this guy to take me through another 800 pages of this history?
Yeah. Some people just have no, and it never feels good being in our position, trying to explain to people that things used to be a lot worse always
right.
across every metric and in every society. I was confronting this on on Two-Way the other day. I was arguing with Nina Turner and Robert Petillo, who are both very left progressive people, who often go to you know, things that are wrong in our, you know, the big fan, they want Medicare for all, they want more funding for education. Why are we such a sick society? Why is there so much inequality and poverty? And I can only listen to all of that for so long before then I start saying, okay, well, things might not be perfect, but directionally, all these things have improved dramatically. And then they'll go, and then Robert Petillo was challenging me and being like, well, no, they used to have it like, and then I said, okay, like infant mortality used to be dramatically high, but like by a factor, a massive, now there is no infant mortality virtually anywhere, and there it used to be even in developed societies very, and I think he said something like, well, we don't really know, you know, the accounting for that wasn't so good back then, so we don't really know. I'm like, Go to a graveyard from the that has graves of people who died in the 1800s, and you will see 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 1-year-old, 1-year-old, 2 weeks, everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think we do, in fact, know that.
Yeah,
we've massively reduced infant mortality. We've massively reduced starvation. Like, these facts are just not known to some people.
Yeah, there's a line in Tolstoy's short story, "Death of Ivan Illich." Yeah, Ivan Illich, whatever. Mm. There's some line where it's like, you know, the family moved from the provincial town to the big city, and you know, his civil service wages didn't go so far. I'm like, oh, that's pretty relatable. And he has some throwaway line where it's like, they had 2 children. One of them died, and it just moves on. And it's like, that's the kind of like quiet tragedy everyone had to deal with back then.
Right.
And whereas today,
you had a bunch of kids and half of them died.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's crazy. People don't appreciate, it's just hard for our brains to wrap around like gradual material improvements, even when they solve problems that were like the pressing issue of the day.
Right.
I mean, a great example of this would be AIDS, right?
Yeah.
HIV used to be a death sentence,
right?
You were going to die here pretty soon. And this was not that long ago. I mean, Rent was early 90s, right?
Yeah. God, I hate that musical.
I hate that musical. The one thing I do kind of like about it, I've only seen the movie, but like, it was 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
The one thing I do like about it is like the, you know, that it's all the happy songs and their relationships, and then like the subtext is just like, you're all living in the shadow of this pandemic that's going to kill you all.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But now you can get HIV and live a normal lifespan, right? Because of gradual improvements in medical care, right? This thing
it can be prevented without any lifestyle changes through thanks to medicine.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, if you came out with today's medical care for HIV in 1995, everyone would have considered it a miracle, right? But because it happened gradually over time, there wasn't just the like, oh, here's the AIDS pill that solves it, right?
Right.
People can't appreciate that, right? Or like something that was going around Twitter recently was treatment for cystic fibrosis, right? Mm. used to be, you know, you'd get it, you know, you'd be born with it and you would die very, very quickly thereafter. Now there's new drugs where it seems like you might very well be able to live to your 80s, right? Look at the Ben Sasse, right? Had pancreatic cancer, was convinced he was going to die. Some new experimental treatment suggests that he's in like substantial remission, right?
Amazing. He did an amazing and very brave thing. He did an experimental cancer treatment. It fucked up his face for a while. It was very, very courageous of him to, and then was in public about, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Even if he were to die tomorrow, the knowledge gained from what he's done is very admirable. Good for him.
Yeah, not my favorite senator, but he seems like a really good guy.
Yeah.
We don't appreciate that stuff.
People don't appreciate, yeah. No. I think of, antibiotics is always right, the quintessential case, that like people used to die of the diseases we get all the time that are now not a problem at all.
Yeah,
you look up almost, okay, when did it become, like, okay, you get this in the 30s, you're dead. 40s, you're dead. And by like the 40s, 50s, now they're mass introducing them, right? The soldiers all get them first, and then something like, and then all of a sudden it's just, now we're going to live a long time.
Great.
No, but people don't, I know. And when people have rose tinted glasses about looking at the past, it's just, it's not, but it's
you
not.
You need sunglasses for how bright the future will be.
But nobody's satisfied by those arguments that historically we have things really, really well.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand it would be frustrating if you present it as like a non sequitur, you know, you're like, the housing's really expensive. It's like, oh, but we have penicillin. It's like, okay, great. But can we actually get back to solving the housing stuff?
Yeah. But our former colleague, Emma Camp, who's at the Wall Street Journal, she had a video this week that went pretty viral on X for them, talking about the decline in the price of the refrigerator and how great that is. And an example of the wonders of capitalism. And of all people, Chris Rufo responded to it saying, like, while this is correct, this kind of commentary, he thinks, doesn't meet the moment because, consumer electronics, consumer items, that's all better. But, you know, people are most upset about housing and education and healthcare costs. And, you know, this doesn't. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe part of the problem is people don't, recognize the positives in all these categories. Yeah. And then you're referring to all the categories where the government is the most involved, where everything's gotten the most expensive.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it. People talk about cost disease too, where it's like the economy gets more productive, therefore wages go up, and things that still require a lot of labor, therefore get more expensive, even in real terms. That's an issue too. But, you know, automation is the solution to that then, right?
Yeah.
I think it's also just, man's search for meaning goes on. We're perpetually, satisfying material wants is good and necessary, and you would bitch if they weren't satisfied, but it's not going to cure all your ails. Yeah, Hitler has, or not Hitler, sorry. Sorry, let me back up. George Orwell, in his review of Mein Kampf.
Okay.
Sorry, okay. Not Hitler. In his review of Mein Kampf.
I've only read Mein Kampf 16 or 17 times. But
oh, really?
Ahead.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, it's talk about, that was rigorously fact-checked, unlike Citizens by Simon Sharma. he has a really perceptive line in his review of Mein Kampf where he's like, socialism and capitalism basically are offering you the same thing, which is we're offering you a good time, right? People look at Nazism with its offer of struggle and death and violence and say, there's something I kind of like about this.
Yeah.
It's like that's part of the human soul too. So, yeah.
For these dispossessed young men who sign up to die in a battlefield in Ukraine.
Yeah. But maybe Russia one day.
Sorry. Yeah. All right. Should we wrap it up there?
Yeah, let's do it.
I think we'll leave it there.
Before I make any more Hitler faux pas.
Yes.
All right.
See you guys next week.